Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of Operations Group at the National Training Center, Fort Irwin, California. My name is Captain Seth Rivetta, and I will be hosting this podcast today. The Gauntlet brings you best practices from the Army's experts in combined arms operations.
Today, we will be sharing a podcast made by the Scorpion Team, one of our combined arms battalion trainers, called Left of the Bang, a Scorpion Team Desert Dialogue. This mini-series highlights how to best prepare each warfighting function for some of the challenges of the National Training Center.
I'm Major Stephen Powers, Task Force Operations Trainer for the Scorpion Team here at the National Training Center. Today, we will address the protection warfighting function. We have three major areas of which we will go over: CBRNE, Engineer, and as well as Air Defense. And with me today, I have three esteemed colleagues who are going to help me with that discussion. I have Captain Bennett Johnson of the Scorpion Team, Captain Joe Figueroa of Sidewinder, and Major Mario Malpica from the Bronco Team. So at this point, I will start with Captain Bennett Johnson.
I'm Captain Bennett Johnson. I'm primarily the CBRNE OC for the Scorpion Team. Focuses on the battalion's ability to assess, protect, and mitigate for CBRNE operations.
Captain Joe Figueroa.
My name is Captain Joe Figueroa. I support the Alpha Company BEB. I was a KEC trainer for a while, so the combat engineer companies. And we're going to talk a little bit about protection as well as how the engineers support protection through survivability.
And lastly, we have Major Mario Malpica.
I'm the senior air defense officer at the National Training Center. My background is within ADA, I'm a little bit mixed between being a Patriot officer, doing maneuvers, 1st Cav Division, and being a senior ADAFCO at the Air and Missile Defense Command level.
So we'll go right and jump right in, gentlemen. As we said, we're talking about the best preparations. The protection warfighting function is a very interesting one because a lot of battalions probably think about it, MDMP, probably a little bit too late or is very reactionary. So Captain Johnson, we'll start with you in reference to the CBRNE side. How can a combined arms battalion best prepare?
Preparing for the CBRNE defense starts back at home station. Straight off with ensuring that we have the right personnel in place, have the right CBRNE equipment that's actually PMCS'd and prepared to go out and conduct that defensive operation. And then whether or not we actually have our CBRNE sections within our TAC SOP. How are we reacting to a chemical attack? How are we conducting our warning and reporting systems? Is that process actually happening from the unit, from the company level, up through battalion, up to brigade to initiate all the processes of the response action? Do we have an actual appointed organic decon section within the battalion to conduct our operational decon? Who are those personnel? Have they been appointed? Have they been trained? Where are they coming from? Is it just the S3 folks who are going to be pulled away from their duties for 2 to 6 hours, or do we have another dedicated platoon from one of the maneuver companies? Are we actually incorporating our CBRNE defense training within the maneuver training? While platoons are conducting a react to IDF sticks lanes, can we throw in a CBRNE inject within that to expand our knowledge? It doesn't have to be directly CBRNE-focused training. We can incorporate within the maneuver training.
Okay, no, that's good. You bring up a good point. Two areas there, best preparations, and I know, for at least from my perspective as a former maneuver battalion S3, is that op decon. That op decon team, setting that team, establishing what that team, who those people are and what do they do. I know that's definitely something very important as well. And just like anything else, preparing your equipment, making sure that it's not the first time that you touch that equipment. And one way to do that is to ensure that you have it incorporated into your maneuver training as well. Okay, I appreciate that, Captain Johnson. Okay, we're going to move over to the engineer side of the house real quick and talk with Captain Figueroa about how battalions can best prepare and also some common issues of what you have seen.
For the engineers, there's a very wide breadth of what engineers can provide. We generally think of engineers providing survivability as that subcategory of protection to include constructing firing positions, protective positions, camouflage, concealment, hardening facilities. So really where you need to start is what is that capabilities brief? As engineers, we come in all shapes and forms. Here at the National Training Center, we have 4 different engineer teams and we all have different MTOs. So you'll have ECCs that are performing earth moving generally, maybe a little bit of vertical construction. You have KECs, which are more combat engineer oriented. They may have a little bit of earth moving capability, but no vertical. Your alphas and bravos have different types of protection capabilities. So really understanding what is that capability that your engineer company is providing. Analyzing those threats, engineers, especially when we think about the BEB, we think both in the support area as well as in the fight, looking at what are the threats, what is the method that that threat can get to us, what is the risk to our critical assets, creating that protection prioritization list, and then using that list to assign engineer assets. When we talk about protection and what we're protecting, we also think about not just critical assets and even tactical assembly areas and like whole areas and vehicles. We also think about lines of communication at the battalion level. So knowing that in a BCT, you have a route clearance platoon. If you are finding issues on those lines of communication, you're requesting that asset and knowing what to request. And really, that also comes going into common issues, talking about that integration and making sure that not only is the engineer telling you what they have, but also what is available across the brigade.
So you talk about the capabilities brief. We have seen the battalions here. They normally will receive an engineer company attached to them. We hope that they have done some type of maneuver training together back at home station. Just really quick, what have you seen any common issues about integrating that engineer company into that maneuver battalion?
So we see integration generally in three different categories. You have the logistics framework, which we see a lot of issues. They receive a lot of enablers. Their FSC has to react to that. The maneuver has a similar issue where they receive some enablers, they receive engineers, and they have to react to that as well. Whether they're pulling them into, you know, GCSS Army or whether they're making sure that sustainment framework works. And that feeds into planning. For engineers especially, we have to think one phase ahead because a lot of the assets, whether it's class 4 or class 5, they take time to get up to the front. So in order for us to be prepared to help the maneuver battalion in their next fight, whether it's a defense, whether it's another breach, they need to request those things early on. And being a part of that maneuver planning cycle and really getting in with the S3 plans is what makes a successful engineer and a successful integration. And then finally, task organization. So that capabilities brief really feeds into that task organization, which then feeds into not only how are we fighting the fight now, but how are we fighting the next fight.
Thank you very much for that clarification. Now we're going to move over to the air defense side of the house. We're going to focus on that relationship between battalion and as well as brigade, but then that expectation management. So Major Malpica, if you go ahead and let us know, how can battalions best prepare for this particular area of the protection of warfighting function?
I'm going to start off with describing air defense. Now we've always kind of been relevant, but I want to talk about it through different lenses. And I know there's a lot of air defenders that get very passionate about warfighting functions and where does air defense fall under. One way to look at it is air defense is just that, it's air defense. And air defense touches different warfighting functions. So we have a role within fires, intel, protection, maneuver, and sustainment. And then really the tactical level, we got to start off at the brigade combat team level. When we pull up FM 3-96 brigade combat team operations and do a quick search for ADA, what kind of are the tasks and roles for Adam Cell at the brigade level, we see that there's a lot of integration that they have to do with fires, but they do own the protection warfighting function. A couple tasks. Captain Figueroa already kind of touched on it a little bit with the PPL. The Air Defense Artillery Planner needs to kind of come into the picture with inputs to the protection working groups. Those inputs are the critical asset list and the defended asset list. And those feed the PPL. Really, at the brigade combat team level, that protection working group, the entire protection cell is coming together. The output is really that PPL. But the inputs for that is kind of an air defense function for protection. What is the CAL and the DAL? There's a way to formulate that, but I don't want to get in too many details. I want to get down to the Combined Arms Battalion and the functions of ADA. A Combined Arms Battalion needs to be cognizant of what is critical for the brigade combat team for mission success. For the battalion battle staff, it's important that they understand the different aerial threats and what the enemy's air avenues of approach are. Additionally, what ADA assets they have to counter those threats. Within the orders process, the battalion staff needs to read the Air Missile Defense Appendix, which is Appendix 7 to Annex Delta within the Fires Annex. They need to understand what tasks to subordinate units they may have for their non-dedicated Stinger teams and understand what air defense units may be supporting them that they will be receiving from the brigade combat team. The non-dedicated Stinger teams are non-air defenders organic to the units. If a battalion has a dedicated air defense unit supporting, they can expect that the ADA unit maintains direct support to the BCT and is further delegated general support to that battalion. It's always a good practice to integrate training and rehearsals for all the ADA teams. When a short-range air defense artillery unit is tasked to support a battalion, integration and building those relationships is really critical at the front end. command.
You brought up a lot of good points. The biggest area there is that relationship building, and as well as shared understanding of understanding what is in the orders process. Just what common issues you have seen in reference to this ADA effort?
If ADA unit is integrated late, here at the National Training Center, we see units where they get ADA support during the rotation, but they haven't done any home station training with that unit. So really, they come here during the RSOI process, test saturated, number one. They also have to figure out that how they talk with that supporting unit and how are they going to receive supplies, who are they receiving supplies from. The command and support relationship sometimes is skewed, and the DOC's, i.e. my team, has to kind of get involved and assist a little bit.
Outstanding. Thank you very much for that. We bring up a lot of good stuff. We're talking about CBRN with the OpDecon integration, as well as understanding your equipment before you get here. Engineers, and we talk about integrating the engineer company, understanding their capabilities and all of the logistical needs and also expectations to not only welcome that element there, but also training it so that way it's not a surprise when they get here. And obviously air defense, you know, we talk about that relationship building and having that shared understanding and that orders process and make sure, hey, if you integrate them late, you're in that reactionary mode instead of that proactive mode, correct? So as we transition in about what the best practice that what we can tell the battalion leadership before we get out here. So we talk about how to best prepare and we talked about the common issues. So as you guys were coaching to reverse those trends, we'll start back with you, Captain Johnson, about, you know, what are some of the best practices you can offer battalion leadership from the CBRN perspective?
Battalion leadership enabling their CBRN soldiers, whether that's the battalion CBRN officer or NCO, or down at the company level with the MBC NCOs, enabling them to actually do their job within the CBRN row. Upkeep of equipment, making sure that M26 decon apparatuses, that they're actually PMCS and operational for use. Make sure that pro masks are actually utilized correctly and ready for their use. And generating the chemical defense equipment, the CDE report, monthly. That's one report that maneuver elements routinely fail to prepare, but it is that snapshot of a maneuver battalion's capability to actually conduct CBRN defense to help protect their soldiers. Other areas that I've seen is whether or not we're actually combining arms across warfighter functions. The CBRN is not just protection. They have a part of sustainment. How are we getting water resupply for decom missions? How are we getting resupply for different functions? How are we conducting that reverse IPB with the S2 to understand where the enemy's capabilities are, where they may utilize those capabilities across the battlefield? And then, like what's been said, if helping to integrate those specialty platoons, if they get attached to the maneuver battalions, how are we bringing in those leaders to help conduct planning processes? Are they staying to the side, or are we bringing in those key leaders to help out the battalion staff?
One thing you brought up is that CDE reporting, that integration of planning effort, you know, getting in there early to make sure you have the right people in the room. And I'm assuming that's talking about the MA all the way to the orders production. And then making sure that we understand that the CBRN effort is not just, yes, it's maybe under the protection warfighting function, but they have so many efforts that bleed into all the other warfighting functions. Okay. Captain Figueroa, same question. From an engineer side, best practices that you think you can offer battalion leadership?
So for best practices, sir, we talk a lot about incorporating enablers early and often into the planning process. We want our enablers to be proactive versus reactive. We also understand that enablers, as they are fed into the brigade or the battalion or even companies, they are the subject matter experts in their craft. And so a lot of times there's a lack of understanding that whether it's an engineer company commander, even if there's a task force engineer, it is incumbent on the engineer company commander to be there for that planning process. You know, a lot of the coaching is making sure that we have the right people in the right spot at the right time so that we are establishing the needs of that element to provide the most efficient and best product for that maneuver force. And as I said earlier, planning for that next mission. Sometimes, you know, that company commander is in the middle of the breach and they're thinking breach, breach, breach. They also need to be thinking, what about that transition? Where are my assets going to be? Where are they going to be lined up immediately after that breach? And I think that the really successful company commanders are the ones that are able to delegate those portions of the planning so that they can either be in multiple places at once and make sure that while we're focused on the current fight, we're also focused on the future fight, or they have delegated to somebody who can focus on that future fight and make sure all resources are available. And finally, everything here is at echelon. Protection's at echelon. We have to think about protection from, you know, the individual soldier all the way up to the brigade level. And a lot of planning stops maybe at the battalion level or the company level. Once you have codified that, put that in your SOP. And that's the best practice.
Appreciate that, Captain Figueroa. Before we end here with Major Montpica, what are the best practices to offer based off what you have coached out here?
For ADA specific, just for any unit, so time's going to be your worst enemy coming to the National Training Center. You're not going to gain it back. As much as you could do at home station, it would pay the dividends when you come out to the National Training Center as far as integrating the ADA enablers. I've seen units be extremely successful employing Stinger ManPads teams. If they get that training at home station by coordinating with a Shore Range Air Defense Battalion for an Avenger Master Gunner, so he's a subject matter expert on the Shore Range Air Defense weapon platforms, for him to come to them and give training at a minimum, if they get that training from that Avenger Master Gunner at home station, you have a collective training with all the crews before coming to NTC. If they've done visual aircraft recognition at home station before showing up here, prepare for this operational environment, they're going to be extremely successful coming out here with their defense and having a defense in depth with those teams. From the battalion's perspective, again, working with the brigade combat team to kind of set up that Stinger program, I can say they have to identify the personnel, look at personnel that have longevity so they can put in those crews. And then if afforded the time to send to Fort Sill to the actual Stinger course, that would be great so they can get the initial qualification training. You know, the way the Army views the Stinger platform is a weapon platform, so they have to get the IQT, then the individual qualification training from the schoolhouse before they can put hands on the weapon platform, ideally. We mitigate some risk with training. So obviously, if they come out here without the proper training, they're still going to get the training with the Stinger trainers, not actually firing the Stingers if they don't do it at home station.
When it comes to the air defense area there, we're really trying to get, as I say, left of the bank for that, meaning we want units to be more proactive. And having those tools would definitely help them with preparation because, like I said, from this modern battlefield today, which we see what we see on the news here, like the front line is all over the place. Not only in your front, back, rear, but also up top, right? You have to be prepared for all avenues of approach when it comes to protecting yourself from the enemy. Okay, so before we close out, Captain Johnson, you go ahead and tell us if there's any references that you would like the battalion to look at from the chemical side.
I always refer back to doctrine within FM3-11, which is Seaburn operations covering all aspects from excessive site analysis and exploitation to operational and thorough decon. It's kind of the bread and butter. Go into ATP 3-1132 for Seaburn passive defense, how we're setting up our passive defensive structure across our TAAs and our units. ATP 3-11.36 for Seaburn planning helps out the Seaburn staff and how do we integrate with the maneuver elements. And then finally, GTA 03-06-008 for warning and reporting systems, how we should send up those reports from the initial site of the attack throughout the process. That way we can best mitigate and notify across the whole battlefield.
Kind of figure out on the engineer side, any references?
Might be stealing our ADA from here, but there's two protection manuals that I look at, and that's ADP 3-37, ATP 3-37. One talk PPO and actually the planning side of it. The other one, the ATP actually goes into how to employ camouflage and employing techniques that could be used today at the command post level versus specific engineer things.
Major Bobico, do you have any additions to the ADP 3-37?
So counter UAS has been evolving through the years and been utilized more and more in the battlefields. ATP 3-01.15 is the multi-service tactics, techniques, and procedures for air missile defense. Within that, and it's a fairly updated reference from April 2023, hint and talk about the counter UAS piece of the air missile defense aspect of it. So that's a great, great tool for combined arms battalions to kind of get spun up on the counter UAS piece. There are ways to implement some of their platforms so they can have a combined arms for air defense specifically. And so the ATP 3-01.8 is techniques for combined arms for air defense. It takes a little bit of old doctrine still in there. The old doctrine is it's called volumes of fires, specifically for aerial threats. It kind of adopts that technique that's always worked. But really, you know, having that volumes of fires for that aerial threat, you know, it's what we want those teams at echelon all the way to the brigade combat teams to be utilizing. Stinger team techniques, ATP 3-01.18. If they want to get familiarized with TTPs on the Stingers. And then the gunnery program for Stingers, TC, the TC 3-01.18. So same nomenclature, just a training circular, mainly at the brigade combat team level, but battalions can also understand what the gunnery is lined up to be for those crews. More importantly, I would say there's a couple Center of Army Lessons Learned manuals. The first one is the Maneuver Leader's Guide to Stinger, number 18-16 from April 2018. Any kind of air defender supporting any kind of maneuver unit, that would be the one manual I would tell them. That's the one you got to have and read as much as you can. In addition, I mentioned counter UAS. There's also a pretty recent, the number is 22-07. It's a commander and staff guide to counter small UAS in large-scale combat operations.
So a lot of great references for the teams coming here to NTC.
As always, our observer coach trainers are here to assist units. I invite you to look at our Mill Suite page for the latest products from Operations Group and subscribe to Operations Group Tech Talks on YouTube for short lessons learned on successful techniques. Thank you for listening to Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of Operations Group at the National Training Center. We'll be right back.